flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. With the short show yesterday, we didn't get a chance to do two major things. One, our pick 666, and two, we didn't get a chance to talk about any of the rest of the games from the NFL weekend. So we're going to do those both this hour, starting with a Tuesday edition of the Monday edition of the Pick 6 at 6.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
So typically on Fridays, Anthony and I pick six players who we think are going to be the most impactful non-quarterbacks in the Commanders game. So I wound up having to do this all by myself on Friday because Anthony was at Flag Football Nationals. Which, by the way, how did that go?
So I played two different styles. The primary style that I usually play is nine-man. We didn't do so well. We didn't advance to Championship Sunday. But the eight-man style I play, we advanced to the semifinal and lost both times. Like, you get two losses in eight-man, and we lost two games in the semifinal. So we didn't.
But semifinal's not bad.
I mean,
not a champion.
No.
But, you know,
next
not
year.
Bad. Next year. But anyway, all by myself on Friday, I picked six players who I thought were going to be impactful. I actually went all six Commanders. Sometimes we will pick an opponent. And then we review it on Monday, but we didn't have a 6 o'clock hour on Monday because we had Georgetown Villanova basketball. And thus, here we are, starting with
number one.
The first player I picked on Friday, Anthony, was Austin Eckler. That was a good pick by your boy. The reason that I picked Austin Eckler was because of the Commanders' use of pony personnel. Pony just means two halfbacks. And the Commanders actually used two different varieties of pony personnel in this game. They used 21 pony, where it's two running backs, one tight end. They also used 20 pony, where it's two running backs, zero tight ends. And they used them both very effectively. The Commanders used pony at one of the highest rates in the league, and Eckler's a big part of that. And there's different ways that they do it, where they can sometimes literally just have two backs in the backfield, and they did some of that stuff. They would split Eckler out. They would use Eckler in like a tight end almost alignment where he could be a chipper, and one of his big receptions actually comes when he chips a rusher, gets out. The receivers had run deeper down the field. I believe this play was out of 20, where they send other players vertical. If one of those guys pops, great, throw it. If not, check it down because all your zone players go chasing after those guys. And then you have a ton of space. And Jaden quickly gets the ball to Austin as soon as he's out in his route off the chip. And that's a big 20-plus yard gain. That was the 24-yarder. Obviously, late, he also has that big 35-yard run. All in all, six rushes, 47 yards, four catches, 41 yards for Eckler. And just a huge, huge, huge impact on this offense, an offense that at times can struggle to find explosive plays. He gives you two of them, and he gives you some good solid gains in between. Also good in pass protection. And by the end of the day, Anthony, Pro Football Focus had him as their highest rated offensive player in the game. He scored a 90.8 per PFF in his 28 snaps. By the way, well, actually, no, never mind. I'll just save that till later. But yeah, Austin Eckler, number one. Good choice by me.
Nah, great choice for sure. I think Austin, he sort of kind of showed spurts of what we saw early in the season. Like, prior to him missing all that time due to the concussion, it sort of kind of gave us, you know, glimpses of, you know, what we saw early in the season. The fact that he's so dynamic, not only in the run game, but also the passing game. And he had, you know, huge chunks of yards in both. So I think this was a great choice, and we're going to need him again when we play these Eagles. Just being able to, you know, establish the run with him and B-Rob, and both of them be impactful, is what we've been wanting for, you know, the last 4 or 5 weeks. And we got that on Sunday.
For sure. They did some cool. They did so much cool stuff with formations, and I'm very, very curious to see what they can do against Philly. You know, Detroit had some tells. Like, some of the stuff that Washington ran really well was, especially in the run game, this is more B-Rob than Eckler, but for both of them to an extent, was stuff that Buffalo had run very, very effectively. Same formations, and they're good at finding those things. So one of the things I want to do before take command on Thursday when we do our preview show, and before we get deeper into the previews on this show, is I want to go back and watch some of the big plays that Philly has given up, especially the run game. Like, how do teams get them? And see if some of those are some of the things that Washington does well, and then can they do that on Sunday? Number two, please.
Number two.
Oh, I just closed the document, Anthony, which is, you know, a professional radio host's favorite trick. Let me pull up back my notes. Oh, that's right. Number two was Percy Butler, who I selected because I thought that the Commanders would play big nickel quite a bit in this game. And sure enough, Percy Butler, they played a lot of dime in this game, which we'll get to in a second. But big nickel, when they have three safeties and two corners, dime, three safeties, three corners, ultimately six defensive backs on the field. The 27 snaps that Percy Butler played in this game were his fifth highest of the season. He played a season-high 56 against Dallas because Quan Martin was out. He played 49 against Baltimore, 34 against Pittsburgh, 29 against Cincinnati, and then 27 this weekend against Detroit. And he didn't play great. He played like Percy Butler. But I think you saw the reason why I selected him. He's out there against Sam Laporta on that sick. He actually didn't play that one that badly. Sam Laporta made one of the sickest catches that you'll ever see, that one-handed catch for the touchdown. He's also out there on the reverse. He gets caught. Quan is the one that kind of gets caught in a really bad spot. Percy's the backside safety on that, and what it looks like the front side of the run before the reverse gets flipped around. So it would have been great if he could have chased that down, but Quan's the safety on that side who kind of gets caught chasing the run because, you know, hey, got to be strong, got to pursue the run, got to be there in my gap. Oh, no, it's a reverse going the other way. Like, that's just a tough break. That's a well-designed play, well-executed by Detroit. But overall, you see that. And then the other thing that I think is interesting, why he played so many snaps in part, is they go dime in two-minute situations. And Detroit, from 7.5 minutes in the fourth quarter to the end of the game, was in no huddle or was throwing incompletions. And the only reason they were huddling is because the clock was stopped. So Washington's ability to get Detroit out of their comfort zone in this game offensively, even though they scored 31, they did turn it over five times, and there's a bunch of key moments where they just Detroit wasn't as sharp as they usually are, and Percy was on the field for some of those. But I think you saw the, and we're going to talk about it in a second with Zach Ertz, the way that Washington consistently adjusted and kind of made sure they had the best option on the field defensively by Joe Witt versus the way that Detroit handled it, which is very different, and I think that led to some of the different results.
Do you like Percy more in the box or the post?
I don't have a strong lean either way.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
I feel like I would like him. I like the idea of him in the post is a really fast guy I like, yeah. But I don't know that his reaction times let him play with the speed that he has. In some ways, I like him more in the box where it's just like see ball, hit ball.
Yeah, I agree.
Where Quan seems to read the field a little bit better. All right, number three.
Number three.
Zach Ertz. What a game for Zach Ertz, including a fourth down conversion, including a touchdown. Oh, also including the onside kick recovery at the end. But the reason I picked him was kind of the inverse of what I just talked about, Percy Butler. How was Detroit going to match Zach Ertz? And the answer was Detroit matched everything the same. I charted the entire personnel in the first half. Anthony, Detroit played zero snaps outside of the 5 yard line in anything other than nickel. It was nickel, and I the Commanders threw every personnel grouping you could think of at Detroit. 20, 21, 11, 12, 10, 1, 0 running backs, 1 tight end. 0 tight ends, 1 running back. Like they did everything. 4 wide receivers here, 3 wide receivers here, 2 receivers. Detroit's just like, we're playing nickel. These are our best dudes, especially after Amik Robinson, Robertson got hurt. Like, these are our best dudes. They're going to play. And what it did was it allowed at times, like, because Zach can play essentially wide receiver and basically does essentially play wide receiver. It's like, okay, well, we're going to have a bunch and we're going to pull it all the way out towards the numbers. And now we have a linebacker who's man-to-man on Zach Ertz. That's like, well, I have a run responsibility in the box because I'm like the sixth player in the box, not even the seventh, the sixth. But my guy that I got to cover in man-to-man is way out there. And so he's kind of like splitting the difference. And we saw like a different version of that on the Brian Branch blitz into the Terry screen that went for the touchdown. And Zach was a huge weapon for some of that stuff. The way they formation some things and his versatility, the touchdown he gets, he starts inside but then motions outside right before the snap and then runs what I would call like a Texas route, kind of an angle route, and gets back inside and just big bodies his defender. He's open. Jaden hits him for the touchdown. And so just time and time again, the way they're able to use Zach, formation it, motion it, to get him in advantageous situations and then let him use the dark arts of route running to do his thing. Really great job by Cliff. Really great job by Zach. Really great job by Jaden. And that leads to Ertz having a big day in all the ways that you would think he'd have a big day, which is kind of a bad thing for Detroit, which is probably why they lost.
Yeah, the dude, Zach Ertz, man, he, like, talk about a security blanket. Anytime we need a play, that is who Jaden's going to. The third and goal, he goes to him. We get the touchdown. The fourth and, I guess, it was fourth and 3 from, like, the 5. He ends up going to Ertz. I will say, him throwing the ball to Ertz in the flat on, a 3rd and 2 or something like that, I was a little concerned just because Ertz doesn't get yards after the catch, and that was
They needed that to be a lot more open. And Detroit played that one well, but you're not going to win them all. Yeah. But they won. But wasn't that right before the 4th and 3?
Yeah, it was. It was.
And they did that twice, right? They tried to go to Terry on a 3rd down, down in the red zone,
and then it came right back to him.
And then they came back to him on 4th down.
Yep.
And Jaden Jaden had like 2 really bad misses in this game, and he wound up like avenging both of them.
Yep.
Because he had a miss in the flat on the touchdown to John Bates, and then he hits Bates on the 20-yarder later. Yep. And then the play right before Terry on the 4th down is this really beautiful like pick play, basically, where Terry's got a wide open slant. It's a walk-in, probably. They certainly get the conversion, and Jaden just flat out misses it. Like, uncharacteristic rush throw, bad ball, and then he comes back and dots him on 4th down and celebrate scary Terry. Hoorah. We got 3 more players to talk about, including a wide receiver not named Terry McLaurin, who had a big day, hint, hint. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports, presented by Wawa, chicken how you want it at Wawa, with customizable crispy or roasted chicken sandwiches. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, if you'd like, at the Team 980. Miss any part of the show, check out the Hoffman Show podcast, wherever it is that you get yours. We're rolling through our pick 6 at 6, where on Friday we picked 6 players that we thought would be hugely impactful in the Commanders-Lions game. Normally we review them on Mondays, but our show was short yesterday, so we're rolling through on a Tuesday. Anthony, number 4, please.
Number 4.
Number 4, I picked Daron Payne, which admittedly was probably my least interesting pick of the 6 players that I picked on Friday, because I should have picked John Allen. John Allen was awesome in this game. His best game, I don't know, Anthony, in 2 years?
John's?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play a ton this year. Yeah. Like, wasn't very good very often last year. There's moments he had last year for sure, but man, this was vintage. Like, oh yeah, that's why that guy got paid all that money, John Allen. His ability to hold at the point of attack, his ability to penetrate and make plays. I mean, he should have had even more impact in this game. The Laporta one-handed touchdown, people forget that that is a ridiculous play by Jared Goff. He is doing the Pat Mahomes fall down and throw it bit. You want to know who's tackling him? John Allen. Daron Payne in this game. He, like, his PFF grade was pretty bad. Didn't record a tackle. But they did use that formation some with him on the edge. And, you know, being able, I think he's so key this week because, I mean, this formation kind of really came to life against Philly the second time around when they made that change and stopped Saquon. But they need to be able to play heavy-handed and do that with light boxes. And Deron is a huge key to that. But John can do that stuff too. And so I do wonder, you know, does Deron bounce it back? And does he have a big game against Philly? Or does John play on the edge a little bit more? Because they use John a little bit on the edge in this game. But I do think, like, Deron finding his pass rush, being more impactful is going to be big for this team if they want to win two more games, which at this point, that's all that's left to possibly win. Holy crap, they're in the NFC Championship game. Anything else on Deron?
Nah, nothing really to add.
Yeah, wasn't his best day at the office, and it wasn't all that interesting. All right, this guy had an interesting day.
Number five.
Noah Igbinoghene, who had a couple of the targets at him, and that included one where I thought he actually played the coverage pretty well against Amon-Ra St. Brown, and it was a great throw by Goff and a great catch by St. Brown, and they get that, I guess it's like a slot fade. It's an interesting formation. It's kind of like, it's not quite a bunch where there's three receivers bunched together. It's kind of a two-receiver stack, and then one receiver removed from the bunch, but still on a relatively tight split. And I think what that did, and going into painstaking detail here, because I thought it was really good design by Ben Johnson and by Detroit, is if you're in the bunch, you are typically hip to that stuff if you're a corner. Like, if you're playing man-to-man and you're like, oh, we're in a bunch, I'm probably going to get a pick play here. Because he was separated off the bunch, it turns the alarm dials down just a little bit, and it makes it actually a little bit, like, as long as you execute it well, and Tim Patrick did it without drawing an offensive pass interference flag, then you can be pretty effective there. And so that was a really nice design by Detroit. It's a good execution by Goff, good execution by St. Brown. It's a tough catch. Noah could have definitely played it better. I'm not excusing him, but it's not one where I look at and I'm like, ah, terrible job by Noah Igbinoghene. Overall in the game, where is he? I mean, 47 on the coverage grade, or sorry, 47 on the overall grade, because their PFF is going to be like, nope, you should have been more impactful in coverage. And I get it. He was targeted 8 times, gave up 5 receptions for 93 yards, including that 34-yard long. They credit him having given up 60 yards after the catch as well. So, like, that's obviously not going to help your PFF grade. But the thing that I do think is good, and what is worth mentioning, and part of the reason I was curious to see curious to have him on the list, one was the St. Brown piece of it, but the other was how would he play against the run. He had a 79 run grade from PFF, and he's in the mix on a couple of those the runs, and his ability to at least mix it up, if not flat out make a tackle or fill or do whatever, but at least to bog down some of the outside runs to let backside pursuit or let the linebackers get back involved, you know, give Bobby a little bit extra time to shed a block. Like, he was, as a guy who's right on the edge of the box, he did a good job. And that's been a huge, I think, boon for him this year to be a physical football player. And I thought he did a good job of that in this game, even if there's always going to be, I would say, something to be desired in coverage for Noah. And this week, hopefully a lighter week for him, because we know that Philly doesn't do anything but target their outside guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely showed up on tape in the tackling aspect of things. Mayor Gibbs isn't an easy tackle. David Montgomery isn't an easy tackle either. So just the fact, you know, he's willing to get his nose dirty, and that's what Joe Witt, that's all he wants out of all his corners, to be honest. That's why Forbes didn't, you know, last year, because right. He didn't want to do that necessarily. So,
by the way, it's why Dotson's not here either, because he didn't block, which is the offensive version of tackling. And now we'll see Noah and Jahan do battle this weekend. Last but not least,
number six.
Oh, man, was De'Ami Brown not least. 6 catches, 98 yards, arguably his best game as a pro. The catch he makes on that 32-yarder, 38-yarder, where his eyes are covered, like that. That's sick. He's got the 42-yarder on the big cross concept where he just flies on that big X with Terry McLaurin going the other way. Jaden's able to read it out. The toughness he shows as a runner, the physicality on what I would call like some big body routes. Like, can you run a comeback and get some separation and get back to the football and push a guy off without committing OPI at the top of the route? Like, he did that in this game. Just a little bit of everything from De'Ami Brown, as well as some good blocking in the game. Like, De'Ami Brown is turned into a really, really, really good football player. And that's great. What does that mean for his future? We were talking about this in a break earlier, Anthony. Like, I'm not re-signing De'Ami Brown to be like, oh, we've solved all of our number two receiver problems. I don't know that three games. Now, look, if he has two more, and this is just who he is, and they're seeing this every day in practice, then maybe that's a different conversation. And they can have that conversation with De'Ami Brown's agent. But I'm not like, oh, they got to bring De'Ami back and pay him a bunch of money to be the number two. But if I'm going to draft a guy that I hope develops in my number two, and I know that early on I'm going to not be able to trust that guy with a full complement of number two reps, hell yeah, I want to bring De'Ami Brown back. And I want to bring De'Ami back anyway if he'll come back, no matter pretty much what the situation. I just think if you're going to go sign like a T. Higgins, it becomes maybe less responsible because you want T. out there for a super high number of snaps, but also T.'s got an injury history. So maybe you do want De'Ami Brown even if you go sign a T. Higgins. So I think that's an interesting one to watch, but no doubt De'Ami Brown has made himself money. No doubt he has elevated who he is as a player, and no doubt it's helping them win football games. So hats off to De'Ami. I love talking to De'Ami when we had him on the show in the middle of the season, and just like hats off to that dude for putting in a ton of work, and now he's reaping the rewards.
Yeah, he's having a hell of a postseason. Him and Terry actually lead all receivers in receiving yards for the postseason, so in fact, you know, he's stepping up in these moments, something he hasn't done in his entire career. I'll take it right now.
For
these
sure.
These moments matter more, so.
Jaden is the playoffs leading passer, and much of that yardage has gone in the direction of 2 and 17.
Yep.
All right, that is our pick six at six. Tomorrow's pick six will be a traditional Wednesday pick six, so you'll hear from Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn. Also, because it's championship week, there's a couple other folks that are speaking at the podium, so you might have some extra voices in there as well as we give you the top headlines and sound bites of the day at 6 o'clock. For the first time all week, we get step away from the Commanders next and take a look at the other three games from the weekend around the NFL. Some huge, huge decisions that John Harbaugh makes that help end the Ravens season, and much more next on the Team 980. It's Offman Show wrapping up here. Final half hour on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Don't forget, late night tonight, the Clippers hosting the Wizards. You got that here on the Team 980. Right now, though, we go around the NFL as the Commanders will be joined on championship weekend by the Eagles, Chiefs, and Bills. Haven't had a chance to talk about any of those games. So we'll just go in chronological order. The game that preceded Washington's win in Detroit was the Chiefs and the Chiefs and Texans. And kind of what we expected in a lot of ways, Anthony. Chiefs put up a nice, or the Texans put up a nice fight, but at the end of the day, like, they all year could not protect CJ Stroud. And it seemed like whenever the big moment was there, that Steve Spagnuolo was able to just dial up a blitz or dial up a matchup even. And they could get whatever they wanted in the pass rush. And so it was like 8 sacks or something like that that Kansas City ultimately gets of Stroud.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, I was listening to a podcast earlier that was like, you know, the Lions died the way that they died, but at least they were trying to do something, right? Or they died the way that they lived, right? They had a trick play that went awry, and it's like, yeah, but also think of all the trick plays that got them there, right? It'd be like if they lost on a fourth down. It's like, well, you don't get here without doing that, and then you got to be who you are, and you got to do the things that have helped you win football games. The reason the Texans aren't better is because they can't pass protect, and they just never came up with a good plan all year. And so they also died the way they live, but they were just holding on for dear life all season long, and they waste another good defensive performance outside of like 5 plays where they forget the Travis Kelce's who Pat Mahomes wants to throw to in the playoffs, and somehow 87's always wide open in the end zone.
Yeah, the defense definitely, I think they came to play, and that's, how are you going to win games? You got to lean on your defense, but you also need your offense to go out there and make some plays. And sometimes, though, Craig, I will say to the offensive line's point, I mean defense, CJ held onto the ball a little longer than he should have in a couple of those situations because he had the check down several times, like wide open. I'm just like, bro, you're feeling the pressure. Get the ball out. And too many times he tried to, you know, play hero ball. So
That's fair.
It's sort of kind of what we expected, though. Like, we weren't impressed by the Texans' offense all year. And, again, they had another pitiful outing, I guess.
I would expect a coaching change, an offensive line coach to be coming for the Houston Texans. Yeah. Let's say sooner rather.
Are you out later. On Slowik already?
I'm not necessarily out on Slowik.
Okay.
I think he needs to do some serious soul searching. But, like, we can't be like, this guy was awesome last year, and his relationship with CJ is great, and, like, all the good things.
Mm-hmm.
And then just be like, after 1 year, like, never mind, he actually sucks now. Like,
yeah.
He's a very, very young coach, and there's clearly a lot of good things there coming out of that Shanahan tree. Yeah. And there's a lot of good principles that he's got and a lot of good things that he's done. But can he take a good, long, hard look? And it's up to D'Amico, too, to be like, all right, hey, as a defensive coach, here's what I see. Here's why I think that we struggled. And it's on the general manager to be like, you know, some of this is personnel related. To all take a good, long, hard look in the mirror and be like, we have 2 more years of CJ Stroud on a rookie contract. How do we maximize those 2 years? And protecting him and making sure we get him to his second contract and that he is thriving and he develops at the rate that we know he can. Like, that's mission one for the organization. And they addressed it last year by trying to trade for Stephon Diggs. And now they've got weapons, with Tank, like, who knows when he's going to be back. Diggs was not good and then got hurt. And Schultz had a down year and their offensive line was good. Other than that, how was your offense, Mrs. Lincoln? Like, not good. So, am I out on Slowik? No. Do I need to take a long, hard look in the mirror? Abso-freaking-lutely. All right, so that was the other Saturday game. Sunday started with the Eagles and the Rams, and it started with a green football field and a pretty cold day, and then the snow happened. And, man, the factor that the elements played in this game was enormous. And from Stafford's inability to move on an icy field over a guy that has trouble moving anyway at this stage of his career to Kyren Williams not holding on to the football, It mattered a lot. And it comes down very simply to a Rams team that probably was the better team. Like, if you green dot, red dot, or I guess if you want to go green dot for Eagles, blue dot for Rams, who won each play? There's probably more blue dots on the paper. But that's not how football works. It's how significant are the green dots. And between the two Saquon home runs and the turnovers, those are the plays that decide the game. And so you can be as good and clean as you want to down in, down out. You can have as many, you know, 8-yard runs as you want to. Not as good as a 72. Not as good as a 64. Not as good as holding on to the ball in key situations. And that really genuinely was the difference in this football game.
Yeah, ball security is job security. I would not be surprised if the Rams moved off of Kyren Williams. Like, he is super talented. Super talented. Like, we know how dynamic he is. But at the same token, this guy loses the ball entirely too much. And I want to say it sort of kind of cost them, even though they did have a chance at the end of the game. But Jalen Carter, that dude saved everybody in the Eagles organization.
To continue baseball analogies, there are, by the way, Baseball Hall of Famers just announced Ichiro, Billy Wagner amongst those who get in. I'll get the full list for you in trending. But they got the two best closers arguably in the sport. Saquon and his ability to just always bust off the big one late, although maybe he should have gone down this time and wasted more clock, because dang, the Rams definitely made that thing close at the end. But also Jalen Carter's ability in big spots. I mean, Aaron Donald was like that. Chris Jones is kind of like that. There's just TJ Watt has been like that. The best defensive players, pass rushers specifically, always seem to find a way in the big moment to unleash their best move. And Jalen does that ridiculously consistently. So, dear Commanders, please be up late.
Please.
Don't let that dude close it out. Although, I guess if the Commanders are down late and Jaden's driving, then you feel pretty good about old number 5/young number 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last but not least, what a game. It lived up to the billing. Didn't look like it was going to, but Ravens and Bills. And, you know, the elements play a little bit of a factor here as well. Lamar, that early fumble. If that's not a slick ball, you wonder if he's able to hold on to that. But also just kind of I think there's two things about this game for the Ravens that drive me nuts. And congrats to the Bills. They're deserving. They've been a great team all year. The way they've remade that team, to, instead of Josh Allen just having it all on him, to say, how do we support this guy? And they go get James Cook. They invest in their offensive line. And they've built a really great offense where he didn't have to do a whole lot passing the ball, but they also use his running ability in the playoffs to enhance what they're doing. And they run all over Baltimore. And I will say, though, on the other side of it, on the Baltimore side, the thing that drives you nuts is this is how they lost the games all year. Silly stuff. Like, Mark Andrews, you've got a big game. You're you. Get forward. Like, that angers me if I'm John Harbaugh. The fumble that Andrews had, more than the drops. Drops happen. It sucks. He's one of the most reliable guys. That two-point conversion is absolutely killer, obviously, because it's a chance to send it to overtime or at the very least get your defense back on the field with a shot as opposed to essentially game over, barring an onside kick. So, like, the drops, yeah, that hurts. But the play before Lamar fumbled, Andrews had a drop. But to make the decision to say, I'm going to try to juke a guy on a snowy, icy field and get more yards when I could just safely dive forward and get more yards and take the first down, that's the one that drives me nuts. Like, you've got to live as ball is life. And that's where Baltimore really hurt themselves. And then the other thing that drove me nuts for Baltimore is they had that drive in the third quarter where Henry got going. And they ran the ball right down Buffalo's throat. And then they go for two and they pass it. Why? Just run it one more time with Derrick Henry. What? Do not make the things more complicated than it has to be. And if they get stopped, I can live with the guy who just got me 60 yards on one drive getting stopped. That one drove me nuts.
That drove me nuts as well. But also, Craig, what they did in the third quarter, they should have been doing in the first, the second,
well,
the
they
third,
tried.
And the
they
fourth.
Tried. Buffalo did a really nice job against the run, and then Baltimore made some changes. And it goes to show, like, if you wait till halftime to make adjustments, it's often too late. And they were able to find some stuff, and they did a better job. But also, like, Lamar only had 6 carries in this game. That feels way too low for a playoff game. Buffalo played, like, really soft zone coverages and tried to just, hey, we're not going to pressure Lamar too much. We're not going to spook him into running. And he tried to throw, and, like, he had some success, but that success dies when you turn the football over. And that's kind of the story of the first half of that game, is they have 2 turnovers. And when you only have like 4 possessions and half of them end in turnovers, like, that's not going to end well for you as an offense.
Yeah, I forgot. I mean, you factor in the turnovers. That's sort of kind of why Derrick Henry only had 5-6 carries. But I'm just like,
right,
bro, he should have had way more carries. But at the same token, they want to
put
the ball in the air. Yeah.
You don't have the plays. Lamar throws the pick. Which is a bad throw / miscommunication. And then Lamar has the fumble.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you have, did Andrews have the fumble in the first half too? Or was that a second half fumble?
No, that was the second half.
I was about to say, because I was like, they only had so many possessions. But like, they probably had 4 or 5 possessions in the first half.
Yeah, the fumble was fourth quarter, actually.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, there's not a lot of opportunities. So down goes Baltimore. If I'm Baltimore, though, I'm running everything back. I'm hoping Monken doesn't get a job. I'm bringing back Henry. Like, we're good. We're just going to focus better next year. Like, I would not change a thing. Legitimately would not change a thing. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, we will wrap things up with real things real people said into real microphones. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Tomorrow on the show, Robert Mace from the Athletic Football Show is going to join us. Excited to chat with him. One of the smartest guys talking about the league. I think he's the best. I think their show is the best NFL podcast in the NFL podcast sphere. So we'll have Robert on the show to talk about what the Commanders have done, getting to the NFC Championship game, and all that. Anything else? I know. I guess we got a whole bunch of people at the podium tomorrow. Jaden's actually even talking twice this week. Jaden's talking Wednesday and Friday. So we got a bunch of extra media stuff happening for the Commanders this week, because of the stakes. You know, the media attention is so much higher. There's only four teams that anyone's talking about in terms of actually playing football games. Of course, you got the coaching news and things that we were, paying attention to more last year as the games were going on in the background. But, tomorrow, Dan Quinn, Jaden Daniels, as usual. I think Terry is going to the podium. I think Bobby's going to the podium. There's a couple other guys that are going to the podium as well. So we will have plenty of sound for you tomorrow on the show. We'll have Mays. We'll see who else is out there in Ashburn and see if, we can garner up a few, guests on the horn, for tomorrow's show. It's not our last, but Anthony, we got to figure out what we're going to do for competition Wednesday tomorrow. There's only two games, so I think we should probably pick both of them. And if we pick the same, we're going to have to go like a total. What are we going to do? We got to pick a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, I just gave you some homework, gave you something to think about.
Well, also, Craig, we owe our ice bath.
Well, we still do, yeah. We could just walk outside for 30 seconds.
Man, it is that cold outside. I'm not going to lie.
It's terrible outside. Yeah, no. As I've said, I have a plan for the ice baths. We're not punting that. We are going to do it. There's a place that has ice baths that is opening right underneath our building. So when that opens, I figure we just go. That's my plan. Then we don't have to coordinate anything. We just go before work.
Man, it's gonna be cold.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be as cold outside. And if it is, maybe there's a back door that we can enter and not have to walk back outside after.
Is there like a heated room or something?
Well, they do like saunas too. So
okay, because that's where I think I might have to go after I get out.
That'd be the best show I'll ever do. I'll be so clear-eyed. I'll just be like firing on 1,000. It'd be great. Other than that, we got Ian Eagle on Friday. Again, remember the game this weekend, the NFC Championship game, is on Westwood One, and we have it here on the Team 980. Ian, Kurt Warner, Ross Tucker on the call. Ian's going to join us on Friday. We got some other stuff in the works as well. Pretty pumped to chat with some other guests once we have those locked in. We'll let you know when they're going to be joining the show. All right. Housekeeping. Unfortunately, again, if you missed this news, I hate to be the one to break it to you, but a sad day for us here at the Team 980 and at 106.7 The Fan. As late last night, we lost our colleague Pete Medhurst. He'd been battling brain cancer, and unfortunately, he succumbed to that cancer despite a valiant fight. Just 55 years old, and cancer is the worst. It's just horrible. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care if you're rich, poor, white, black, anything. Just cancer is a horrendous, ravaging disease. And unfortunately, it got Pete. And we miss our friend. We miss our colleague. I opened the show talking about my memory of Pete. So if you want to listen to that, you're obviously more than welcome to on the podcast or on YouTube or however you want to. But much, much, much more importantly, Pete's family, it needs some help. And if you could help them with a financial donation, they have a GoFundMe page. It's up on my Instagram story. There's a link at hoffman.sports. We've also pinned it in the YouTube chat, and it's in the episode description here on the station and all the on-demand content. We'll make sure to include that link as well, podcast, etc. So if you have the means and the ability to help Pete out and Pete's family out, his wife Brenda and their kids, then we definitely recommend doing so. You can go to the GoFundMe page. There's also a link at the team980.com. Anthony, how much time do we have left in the show, sir?
We have 15 seconds.
All right, so that'll do it for the show today. Again, search Pete Medhurst GoFundMe. That's another way you can find it. So if you can help Pete out, we'd really appreciate it. Have a good one, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow here on The Hoffman Show.